Just a moment. We find in Genesis 6, 7, 8, and 9 the record of Noah and the flood. And we're studying that in the grades 4, 5, and 6. And so they may hear something that they've already heard in this invitation. But maybe I'll add a little bit. But in the book on talking about Noah and the flood, there's a question in the book that asks, what do you think Noah's friends were saying while he was building the ark? Now, that's a thought question. And it's designed to make us think. I like thought questions. And we can probably get a good idea of what they were thinking based on, or what they were saying based on what people today say when they're confronted with God's command, or when they're something that they're told to do by the Lord and looking for ways to not do it. It took Noah a long time to build the ark, and as they watched him, he tried to get them to change their way. This was a wicked world. God had decided to destroy them because of their wickedness. But Noah, we're told in 2 Peter 2 and 5, was a preacher of righteousness. So he was trying to teach the people to turn to God. And their response to him may have been different things, but it may have been indifference, or it may have been ridicule, or different things like that. But we know that it was not acceptance. You know, society as a rule, treated him as a fanatic or maybe an idiot. You know, you can see what they may have said. A flood? Really? Punishment for not following God's strict laws? Well, I'm not a saint anyway. Never seen anything like a flood before. This is totally outside our scientific understanding of what the natural world is like. Well, the world, this has been going on a long time. The world hasn't come to an end yet, has it? But when the doors was closed on the ark and the torrents of rain started coming down, I wonder what they were thinking then. Another interesting thing about this question is it uses the term friends, Noah's friends. What was Noah's friends saying? Generally, we think when we're reading in the Bible about someone who is opposing the truth, opposing someone who's teaching the truth, we think of them in the term of enemies. We usually don't think of them, I think, as friends. But really, is it our friends that have the most influence on us? And maybe the groups that we're in, whatever different kind of groups and acquaintances we have, these are the people that have the biggest influence. Even religious groups, these are the people who have the most influence on us. And it's these groups, when they cause us to think like they do, we need to really think about that, because whether friend or enemy, groupthink is dangerous. Just believing what the group believes or going along with the group because I'm part of the group, that is not an assurance of truth. And when it comes to truth, there is no safety in numbers. But nevertheless, even if we know that, even if we admit that, peer pressure is real and it's serious. And of course, peer pressure can come in different ways. It can be direct outward pressure, or it can be subtle pressure. Now, which do you think is more effective? Outward direct pressure, where people make fun of you or ridicule you for trying to live a holy life, or point out how out of step you are with everyone else. After all, this is the 21st century. Where have you been, you troglodyte? And of course, we don't like to be accused of being backward or a cave dweller or something like that. And someone may say, are you saying I'm wicked just because I don't believe like you do? You know, that's putting pressure on you, isn't it? Am I a bad person because I wear clothes that are stylish, even though they may be revealing? Well, that's direct pressure. But subtle pressure also is powerful, and sometimes it's so slight we may not notice it. It's difficult to respond to subtle pressure. Well, we know it's there. It's there, all right. And it may be a word subtly said, or it may be a look. It might be a sneer, or it could even be a look of pity, or maybe a look of arrogance. Well, you know, you don't know what you're talking about, but it is something that it was difficult to respond to. If you were to say, "What do you mean by that look?" or "What look?" Nothing. What look? What are you talking about? But subtle pressure is powerful as well. Do you think Noah was protected from these things simply because he had found favor with God? Or did he have to deal with them the same as we do today? Well, Noah had to deal with it, and he had to deal with it for a long time. I don't know how long it took him to build the ark, I'm sure it was a long time. But after he had risen above the mountaintops, riding on the waves, riding on the flood, no one else around except his family, what was Noah thinking? What was he thinking at this time? Oh, it's now so peaceful. No more sneers. All the mockers have been drowned out by the silence of the flood. Not only is it peaceful, but Noah now is at peace with God. What do you think Noah was thinking at this time? I'm glad I made the right decision. I'm glad I listened to God and not my friends. Noah was saved by water because he obeyed God. And Noah was glad at this point that he had obeyed God. Now, Peter uses this event, the event of the flood, to make an analogy between the flood and baptism. Baptism, which he says, saves us when we obey God. In 1 Peter 3:21, actually I'll back up and begin in the middle of verse 20. The patience of God kept waiting in the days of Noah during the construction of the ark, in which a few, that is 8 persons, were brought safely through the water. Corresponding to that, baptism now saves you, not the removal of the dirt from the flesh, but an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who is at the right hand of God, having gone into heaven after angels and authorities and powers have been subjected to him. When we obey God, the one who is in authority is on our side. We have Jesus on our side, and he has been given all authority. Many people today scoff at baptism for the remission of sins. How can immersion in water save you? How can the water save you? Well, obeying God is what saves us. Listen to God, who through Peter and the other apostles and the prophets of the New Testament tell us what God wants us to do. Listen to them, not our friends or enemies, whichever the case may be, who say that it's not necessary. Don't listen to the people who say it's not necessary when God is telling us that it is necessary. Psalm 118:8 says, "It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in mankind." It is better to take refuge in the Lord than to trust in our friends. If you know what to do, if you're wanting to follow God, if you're wanting to obey the gospel, if you're thinking about that this evening, if you're subject to the invitation in any way, please come forward now while we stand and sing.